Hey everyone, here's another little clip from one of the podcasts in my book, How to Become a Pro Cyclist, which you can only get at howtobecomeaprocyclist.com. There's so much content in this book on such a wide range of topics and getting all kinds of different advice from all these incredible mentors that I got to learn from. I'm not saying that as a sales ploy. I just mean I'm trying to give you little tastes of all kinds of different content in the book with these short clips to see if there's anything you might like. If you like it, go to howtobecomeaprocyclist.com to give it a shot. When you buy it, there's only one option, and it's a bundle where you get the ebook, the audiobook, and the video series all together. And the video series gives you the most amount of information because things like photos, videos, screen recordings, or links obviously can't go into an audiobook or ebook alone. But also, the main reason I first started building this book into a video series, which is a bunch of one-hour episodes, so you'd watch it like a Netflix series, it's because when I find a book full of content that I love, the best way to download that content into your brain to really remember it is to read and listen at the same time. So I buy the book and the audiobook together and consume them at the same time. So the content is stored in multiple parts of your brain. That's how the video series is designed to be consumed, except it's all in one. It's just a side benefit that there's also all that extra media content added to it. The other benefit is, if English is your second language, or if you have trouble with mine or any of the guests' accents, it's much easier when you have the captions and the text to go with the audio in the video series to help you understand us. Just a little tip for you, and again, don't worry, you get all three options in the bundle when you buy the book, and then you can decide how you want to consume it. Here's a clip from one of the podcasts with Swain Tuft. If you don't know him, he was second in the Elite Men's Individual Time Trial World Championships, wore the pink jersey at the Giro, and is one of Canada's all-time greatest cyclists. But anyone that knows him knows the most impressive stuff about him is from the life he lived before becoming a pro cyclist. The guy dropped out of high school to ride a $40 thrift shop mountain bike all over North America just to go mountain climbing because he couldn't afford a car. He welded up a trailer to hook up to the bike so he could tow all his food and mountaineering equipment and his 80-pound dog named Bear from Alaska to Mexico. If you're from Europe, look at how far that is to go from Alaska to Mexico. That's like going from Spain to Siberia. He would literally stop at a farm, ask the owner to work for him for a few months, baling hay for a few months, just so he could make some cash so he could keep eating, then get back to these insane trips and continue on the road. I promise, the stories get so much better. So I'll let you get a taste of Swaino here.
So that's something I actually wanted to touch on, like, because I've written down some things here. And, you know, some of the advice you give younger riders is like, find a mentor and ask the right question. And that, I think, is the best advice, or just one of the best pieces of advice in the book. And the reason is I think that most young people have a real problem with doing that. And so for sure, it's a confidence thing and like, oh, like it's a stupid question. They probably don't want to hear from me. And I will tell you that, like, I don't think there's one rider that I know of that if you approach them in a like respectful way and ask like intelligent, well thought out questions, there's not a single person that's not going to answer those things, right? So I think so many young riders miss out on that by just going like, oh, they wouldn't want to talk to me or they don't have time for that. And it's like, okay, yeah, people are busy, but like a professional rider's life, as you know, is really like they train and then they come home and you have hours of time just kind of hanging out. So you can. I mean, most people I know, like most good riders I know, have that time to offer. And it's like, it's a really great thing to be a part of. And I think, like, you know, that was one of my first impressions with you is that, like, when we first started interacting, you know, you were making the most out of that. And like I said, for people that have like been there and then are maybe at the next level, they have all the time in the world for that because it's like, how the fuck do you do it? You know? So it's like everyone needs help and there is no dumb question. So, yeah.
I absolutely agree with that. And that's something that I wish I would have learned earlier. Like I sort of started to learn that after you reached out to me. Like when you sent me that first email, I thought it was a prank. I was like, there's no way. And then I'm saying like, yeah, sure, man. Like whenever you got some time and you're telling me you want to have a meeting on your rest day at the Giro, and I'm, why does this guy know about some race that I'm doing in California and he's going to take time away from the Giro to talk to me? And it was insane. And the amount of, like, you were so open to that. And then every single pro I've run into like that, like hanging out with a guy like Chris Froome, and he's asking me about my training. I'm like, I'm walking into this camp thinking I'm just going to be the fanboy here. And he wants to give me advice and hear about everything that I've done and spend hours talking to me like that. Or then I go to an altitude hotel and see the only other person staying there is Anna Meek, and she's winning everything this year. And I'm just like, well, okay, I'll like stay back. Like, I won't bother you. Like, I'll let you do your thing. I don't want you to be bothered. And she's inviting me. Yeah, come train and come do this, have dinner. Like, it's like unbelievable how willing these people are to offer you advice because they get that they were there once. Like, I would actually say they're more willing to talk to a young guy or girl that knows that is not going to do anything for them rather than talk to some journalist that might write a nice thing in the whatever newspaper about them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's a great example of like two massive champions that just, I mean, in the end too, I think like great champions are always learning. So there's not something that I think, anyways, the best people I dealt with were always learning. And so I don't think there's one part of them that thinks that they know everything, right? The best ones anyway. Some people do think they know everything, and that's their deal in life. But yeah, the best ones I always found were like continually learning. And I think that's why they always were happy to talk to just everyone they could, you know, to learn as much as possible.
Yeah. And one of the other things you said before, as far as like, okay, how do you do it now if you want to get to Europe and try to do it? And I know how hard it was for me to like come over, and the thing that would make my blood boil, like the thing that would make, I would have so much patience for guys if they were late or they were messy or they're a little bit childish, all this stuff, because I just didn't want to add any more stress to the group, because there's already going to be so much stress in this bike race. We don't need any more stress when we're not. So I would put up with a lot of that. But the thing that drove me insane was when guys would just kind of piss away the opportunities that they have, because you know how hard it is just to try to get there, just to get those first steps. And then when I got invited to just start hanging around the Bora team, guys, but you see their development team, like a junior team. This isn't even an under 23 team. When you see this team and you see the truck rock up and you see how well this team is run, I'm like, this is insane. Like half of you is like, wow, that is amazing. I would have loved to have that as a kid. And this is so great because these kids are going to be unreal when they have access to that stuff. But then part of you just, it's like you feel for the guy that doesn't get on this team, because it's like, okay, so you basically have to be world class, show that you're world class by the time you're 14 in order to get onto this team. And if you're not on this team, if you're just some kid doing it like what would be the normal way for juniors, like, I don't know, maybe your parents or you're working at the bike shop or something like that, just normal, just getting into the sport, like it doesn't matter if you're the better athlete, you're going to get steamrolled by this team, because just like the whole marginal gains thing, like when you have that much, it does make a difference. And you feel for the kids that it's like, okay, great that we're making these young guys so awesome, but I feel like you're limiting the pool so much now by just focusing so hard on such a small group so young.
Yeah, it's like that thing of the rich just keep getting richer, you know? So it's like from such a young age, you've just been propped up and everything is perfect. I will say like that is like what we see a lot in the World Tour at the moment. And those ones, like especially the real genetic super freaks, they just keep on winning, and that's great. But I would have to say, like coming from the other side, I would prefer to have life experience and all of the other struggles involved rather than that easy life to it. Because cycling is super hard, don't get me wrong, and those guys are incredibly tough in their own right. But I think they're missing out on a huge part of life, like by just only being like one-sided like superstar. And it's great. It's great for their career and all those things. But you know, when I just look at the guys that come from North America, all of the hoops and hurdles, it's hard. They have to jump through, and the things that they learn along the way, those are way more valuable life lessons. Because, like, you know, it's something you and I have talked about a fair amount, is that sport it's pretty short. You know, even with a really good career, it's like, wow, like a really good long career could be 15, maybe some guys do 20 years. But that's like a small part of your life, you know? And I think of like the guys who've just been propped up and and held in such high regard wherever they go, whether they live in Belgium or Italy or whatever. That's not a natural way to go through life. And I think that, you know, when you do retire from the sport, it's already hard enough. And then to add that whole element where you're no longer this, you know, this superstar, like where your value was like in the last race you did or last thing they saw you on television, right? I think that, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like it's got to be tough on those guys too. Like there's a whole other element that comes with that. So, but yeah, I mean, going back to the question, like what is the right path for those of us that have to come from different parts of the world and don't have those systems to be involved in? Like in Canada, there's no system, you know, like your story is very like, explains that very well. I mean, when you came up, there was, you know, I think just prior to your time, there was a good under 23 program where guys were racing over in Europe a fair amount. I remember Christian Meyer was like, you know, he was part of that system. It wasn't the greatest, but it was still guys getting a chance to race. Like, I mean, he did, you know, under 23 Liège and some of these crazy hard races where you just get a taste of what that is. And yeah, I mean, Canada just doesn't have that anymore. So yeah, like where do you show yourself other than going and trying to do it by yourself over in Europe, like you did, you know, to get on these, you know, I'm listening to these stories that, and especially when we would be talking in the later years and you'd be getting on these like small Austrian teams. And I'm just trying to think like, man, that is so hard because most of the races you're doing, no one gives, like no one knows about, no one really cares about. They're still fucking hard. But yeah, you could be third or win one and it's kind of like, eh. And then you get one shot in Tour of Austria, whatever, you know, Mont Blanc or whatever big race there was. And that might be like two times in the year where you actually get to show yourself. And if you fuck it up, like I was listening to some of your sauna sessions there. It sounds like a real Jack Burke type of a scenario, but like, yeah, you fuck it up and it's like, you know, that's your chance. And so yeah, I keep coming back to like this thing of like how do we create a system where, you know, we can help people make it? And it boggles my mind how people do nowadays.
Yeah, for sure. And so I mean, there's a lot of questions I'd love to ask just on everything you just said, but just to start, yeah, I think one of the reasons why I liked having you as a mentor so much is you were the one guy that I could kind of relate to. Like I just enjoyed, like I had so much fun doing whatever these crazy cross-country skiing in the middle of the night and all this like wild stuff where any of my teammates when I was just starting, like when I was really just starting the sport, they'd look at me like I was a space alien when I talk about like the other stuff that I like to do. Versus when I talk to you, it's like, oh, okay, like here's a guy that's also a little bit different, like not from the typical cyclist, but it worked for him. So, okay, like I felt like it was, you know, Swain's doing it. Okay, maybe it'd be okay for me to do it as well. How did you find though when you go over to Europe? Because just the culture shock is so different from what we experience. Well, I guess like you went to Green Edge, so that's at least a little bit more familiar. But just going over to Europe, having to build a whole new life there, it's very different from the world that we come from back in BC, Canada, and like the mountaineering side of things. Like, how is that for you? And do you have any of those like horror stories of trying to just figure this out and rebuild the whole life there? Because you have to be happy and do the things that make you happy and get the best out of yourself, but you also can't be the nail that sticks out, otherwise you're going to get hammered.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great topic, and it is very much like I guess, you know, for me I was never really keen on Europe, to be totally honest. I never really saw myself there. In 2008, I had one of my best years with Symmetrics. I was really happy to just continue doing that. At the time, North American racing was really healthy and we were doing like the Americas Tour. So we'd be down in South America. Basically, it was like traveling around the world with your best buddies, having a blast, just racing bikes, but like without any pressure or stress. Right, we all made enough money to like keep living every year, and it was a fantastic time. So My ambition was actually not to go to Europe at all, because all I saw up to that point was just, it just seemed like bullshit. And every time I'd gone over there, it just seemed like, well, to be honest too, I didn't see myself being able to even compete there. My experiences at world championships were just like, this is insane. You know, these guys are just on motorbikes. And any chance I got to race against the Urals, I was just amazed at like just the level. But at the time also, there was just so much stories. It was easy to fall into like, everyone's doping. And I was just like, that, I don't need to go over there. And fortunate enough at the time that North American racing was solid. You know, we had really good races. But then in 08, Symmetrix also was folding. So it was kind of like, well, I'd been like, I went to the Olympics that year and I was like third in Tour Missouri. I had like a really big year. But then also the team was folding. And I started talking to Jonathan Botters. And I remember like they were offering a 2-year deal. And I was not, like, I was really like humming and hawing about it. Whereas like most guys, that would have been the dream. I was like, I don't know. Like, but then the way I made the decision was, I was just like, well, I can do 2 years in Europe. That'll be an experience, you know, like go check it out. And worst case scenario, I come home after 2 years and that's that. So I guess my ambition wasn't to always be in Europe. And so when I went, it was more with like not really caring if things worked out. It was, and I think to when I look back at my career, I think I was very lucky that I had that kind of mentality in a lot of things, because I watched young guys coming up around me and they were very stressed to have everything perfect, to get on the right team. How all of these things work out, and they were trying too hard to control all of these variables that in life are not possible to control. And I think that just fucks you more than you could ever imagine, because you're just like, you're pushing so hard for things that just are out of your hands. And so for me, everything was a bonus. So that first year with Garmin, I thought I was just going to be like the world's best cyclist. So I'd, you know, classic overtrain in the fall. And I came in like, you know, training camp, I was good. And then I went to Tour California. I was good. That was when California was really early. And then I crashed and smacked my head and I was basically concussed. But that was, you know, those were the days where, they just kind of looked at you and asked you, can you say your name? And then you're all good, you know, like, somehow that was a good test. And anyways, I went over to Europe. I was still concussed. I remember I was just a mess, like, but I was trying to, like, I was trying to make it seem like I was okay for the team, you know, like, yeah, send me to the Northern Classics, I'll be okay. But the reality was I was sleeping into like 12. I'm not a guy who ever can sleep in, but I was sleeping into 12, trying to get motivated to train. And then I would like be up for an hour and go right back to bed. And then I would try and get on the bike and I would go ride. And I remember this when I knew I was really fucked, is I was just doing like the most basic descent. And I was like, I couldn't actually, like, I had to think about braking and where you brake through a corner. All things that we all take for granted, because it's by feel, it's instinctual. Like, you don't even like, you just have the feeling, right? And I was like locking it up through the apex of corners and just, yeah, it was crazy. But somehow I got like through the classics. I had a few bad crashes there. Luckily enough, I didn't hit the head again. And then but that could have been a turning point for me. Okay. So I guess that's kind of my point, is like, again, I was super lucky. I made it through that period, because if I crashed and hit my head again, that could have been it for me. Right. I never would have been able to come back and do anything to show the team anything. And I would have just gone off like a bunch of guys on Garmin Slipstream from North America, right? They basically churned through that whole team of all these like young North American guys that they were developing. And they just burnt through them all, right? And I could have been exactly another statistic, but luck was on my side and I was able to pull things together for like the second half of the year. And actually in Tour of Austria, like that was the first time I felt awesome again. And I remember like really loving racing again. And at that point I was like, oh fuck, like it's pretty rad over here. Like when you actually can partake in a race. And in that, by that, I just mean like getting in break and like actually being part of some lead outs and kind of contributing in some way, right? So you actually feel like you're part of something. And then that kind of, that's what hooked me. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there, but I, like I said, it wasn't like I was pushing so hard to make things happen. I was just felt like everything was a bonus up to that point. Cause really I'd done up to the point of Symmetrics in 2008, I'd done way more than I ever possibly imagined I'd get to do in cycling, going to the Olympics, doing like a ton of races all over, world championships that year. I was second in the time trial. You know, that kind of stuff. I was like, I was pretty much good. But then my career actually started. So yeah, long story, but that's kind of like a different perspective, right? We all come in this way. And that's why I think like North Americans are so different because our stories are, you know there's a couple years where you're just like, it could go either way. A couple more bad crashes and it's done, right? So.
Okay, yeah. I got two questions based on everything you just said. You can decide which one or both or which one you want to answer first. And the first one is if like the concussion part, because this last year, I had basically the opposite of what you just said. Like you said, you didn't really care so much. This last year for me where I was kind of just funding it on my own and guest riding for teams and just trying to do anything, it was awful because I had so much stress. Like I have to win at this race. I have to get a result so that I can get onto a normal team. Like I'm just burning up my bank account to do it. And then I hit my head I had the accident in January where I really got busted up. And then I hit my head in Gila. Like there was just a massive pile up there. And Miguel Angel Lopez was actually at this race and I was right on his wheel. And he just like took one hand off the bars to adjust his jersey and just must've hit something on the road and lost it. And 90 guys all went down. And so I smoked my head there. And then I hit it again a few days later. And so I was concussed. And then that's basically when I decided to stop the year a few weeks later because I was just pushing so hard. And then I had the concussion symptoms and then just started really freaking out as far as like, hey, I don't want to ruin the rest of my life for this. So I'm curious to hear more about the concussion stuff if you have anything to add there. But the other thing, and going back to what you said before as well, as far as like luck, the best thing I ever took from you was to really enjoy this part of your life when you're free to just chase your dreams. Like you would tell me your stories about when you were a hobo. And I love this stuff because I was like, this is so cool. Like I have no responsibilities right now. And like when I recorded the pod with Mitch, like he was just laughing like, Jesus, how many times do you freaking come back for this? Like how many times do you try? Like, you know, I don't actually know of anybody else that's got, everybody goes to Europe. They last 1 year and either they make it and get a pro contract or they quit and go home. And I don't know of anybody that lasted two and I lasted what, four or five. Like that. And it's just like, how the hell, like, why do you keep putting yourself through this? And it's like, well, because I had so much fun. Like I was in, like, of course, it sucks to be broke and doing shitty races and getting beat up and like having no help and all this kind of stuff doing it. But I really appreciated the upsides to it. And so that's why I was willing to keep trying. And like you were saying, when you only have one or two chances a year, like for a couple of years there, I was betting the whole season on essentially like two or three races. And then COVID comes in and cancel those races. Or the team decides to not go to a race, or like 1 year that the team didn't take me to the race because they only wanted to take Austrian riders to the race. And so they took riders that had never finished a race this year. And I got benched for that because like they only wanted Austrian races for the sponsor there. And so like shit like that happens and it drives you crazy. And it's hard when you only have one or two chances a year, but I just enjoyed all the other parts of life. And so that's why I was willing to just keep trying. Like I might as well enjoy this part of my life.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's hard for me to watch a lot of young guys now, and even when I was still racing, how seriously they were taking the sport. And I get it. It's a serious sport. It's fucking hard. And there's a lot of things about it that are very tough. But and that's why I did have a fair amount of time for you, because I felt like you did enjoy those things. I do think like you were chasing after it very, very intensively, which I understand. We all come at it a different way. But I just like, yeah, I just think so many guys are missing out on like just the beautiful life it does provide, even at the lower levels. So I will say to this day, like, when Christian and I lived in a friggin' campers out on the owner's property, you know, in the winters and in South Langley, which is, you know, similar weather to your Squamish type weather, just pissing rain every day, it still like goes down as some of the most simple, funnest days of my life, because we had nothing on the scoop, but we were always doing something. Right. If we weren't training or doing something like that, we were off on like a hike in the mountains or whatever, you know? So it's like that freedom, you're never going to have it again in the same way. You'll have different ways, and life will be awesome in different ways, you know? Like I think I've explained to you a few times, you have kids and it's busy and it's like all this other stuff that, you know, a guy like me wasn't really wired for. But yet, once I get it figured out, it's like that's now the best part of life, you know? So there's a time and a place for everything. And I just think like too many people bypass this beautiful moment, you know, whether you're in the best team or like the shittiest team, you still get to go out and ride a bike every day and explore. Like for me, that's what that job was. It was like, okay, the racing and all that stuff. Yeah, I could get into it, and I tried to find my niche there and offer what I could. But the main one was like...
Hey everyone, I hope that gave you an idea of some of the content in my book, How to Become a Pro Cyclist. Like I said, I got luckier than most people with having so many wonderful and experienced mentors come into my life. So this book is really just all their knowledge mixed with some of the stories about how I tried to apply what I learned from them and some of the obstacles you might have to figure out. So I hope you can figure them out quicker than it did for me. If you like this type of content, there's so much more in the book, and there's such a wide range of topics covered, so I wouldn't even know where to start with trying to guess which story or bit of advice you'd want to hear next. All I can say is, give it a try. There's a 100% money back guarantee if you finish it and you didn't like it. The only place to get the book is at howtobecomeaprocyclist.com. Anywhere you find me, there's probably a link, so jburke95 at Instagram, for example. If you enjoy this content, it would mean the world to me if you shared it, because it makes a huge difference in helping people find it. I see it every time you share it. And on my end, you never forget those people that helped you in the beginning when you were just starting out. You never forget those people that really wanted you to do well when you're just starting and just trying something crazy like this. And on your end, when you share it, it makes you look good, because then everyone sees you're the type of person who cheers for and supports other people as well. Thanks, everyone. It means the world to me. And if you want more, head to howtobecomeaprocyclist.com. I promise I did my very best to give you absolutely everything.